Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today we have with us on the phone a fellow outdoor insider, newly slain machine, no other than Henry Ferguson. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great, John. Doing great. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely, man. I've been trying to get you on here for a couple weeks now, and we finally made it happen with all your running around killing things. We tied you down for a couple minutes.
Well, you know, they only give us out here in Colorado, they only give us about a month to get that done. So scheduling anything else during that month is, well, it's difficult at best. Ask my wife.
My wife probably has a similar story.
I'm sure she does.
God bless him for putting up for all the stuff that we do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, can you give us a little rundown about yourself and tell the listeners what you're all about?
Sure. So I live in Colorado. I live in the Denver area on the south end of town, and been here a little over 20 years, I guess 22 years now, so which basically qualifies me as a native since that's over half of my life. And it's, as a kid, I dreamt about living in Colorado, and when the cards finally aligned and stars aligned and allowed me to do it, I jumped at the chance and lived here, like I said, 22 years, been outdoors as much as I possibly could be during that time, and met my wife here. We've been married for 19 years, Stacy. She's a very, very lucky woman, to have me and all that. I try to remind her of that as often as I can, lest she forget. But no, I won in that.
Yeah.
Puts up with me hunting and even more than hunting, it's the scouting that really takes a lot of time. I mean, I spend a fair amount of time in the woods, and that's, she's real supportive of that. We've got a 10-year-old son, his name's Kyle, and when he's not playing football and lacrosse and going to school, he absolutely loves going out for hikes with me and going scouting, and it's kind of funny because he's got a lot of his dad in him. I mean, it's hard to get him up at 7 o'clock to go to school in the morning, but when I go in there at 3 a.m. and say, "Hey, Kyle, do you want to go scouting?" He jumps out of bed and, I mean, just jumps at the chance, literally. So,
that's awesome.
But I sell furniture to big furniture stores for a living. That's what I do. And like most people who have been on their job for any period of time, the job I was hired to do 23 years ago and the job I do today don't even resemble each other. I mean, I go to, four trade shows a year here in the United States. In fact, I happen to be in North Carolina right now at one and, also do a couple trips over to Asia every year to present product to the buyers and do quality control on projects and stuff. So that's what I do to fund my my archery and hunting addictions. So
there
works out all right.
Yeah, I mean, everybody I talk to that is in your position, and I mean like your caliber of a hunter and your position in the quote-unquote industry, everybody's got a job that affords them to have the time and the money to do this stuff.
I'll tell you what, you're absolutely right.
And the reason why I bring it up is because I swear to you, I opened up my Instagram today and had seven people say, "Do you mind if I ask you a question?" And I know when they start off with that, where they're going to go. They're going to say, "How do I get my own TV show?" Or, "How do I become a professional hunter?" And
boy, go ahead and answer that, John, because that was the question I was going to ask you today. Come on.
And I always lead off by telling them, listen, there's only about 5% of the TV personalities in the industry, and maybe the number is not exactly right, but it's pretty close to 5% that actually make money solely from that.
Yeah, I would imagine you're like, probably right.
And even those people, the reason why they're making money is because they got products. Or they're...
Yeah.
They're got a product line that's being endorsed, like your Michael Waddells and Bone Collectors type of stuff.
Yeah, I've heard the best way to start out, you know, to make $1 million by hosting a hunting show is to start out with $2 million.
And, yeah, exactly.
You know, that's, I think that's probably true. So the dream is dead. There we go. I guess I'm going to have to continue working for a living.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, and I tell you, so I don't want to crush your dreams because it's something you can do. So if you want to take me, and I consider myself a success because I get to do what I want to do.
Absolutely.
But not because I'm rich from it. I tell everybody, I say, I make $35,000 a year because of hunting, and I spend $45,000. But the way I look at it, is I would be spending probably $30,000 a year anyway. Because
absolutely.
I like to travel that much, and I like to hunt that much that, you know. So
you
for
bet.
Me, it helps... you know, feed the beast, so to speak, and whatnot. But anyway, I digress. So interviews with the masters, I get a bunch of questions shot at me all the time, and I always, you know, kind of save them for the people I feel are best suited to answer them. I'd say you're most known for your mule deer hunting, so we're gonna gear these questions towards that. What would you say, like, your top three things, or what can you attribute to your consistent success? Like what are your three main things, or four or five, whatever you want to give, and just throw us out as some type of hierarchy.
I'll tell you what, John, I break it down. I have the three P's, and it's practice, patience, and persistence. Practice, I shoot my bow a lot. I shoot just about on a daily basis. Now, people are probably saying, okay, now wait a minute, you travel a lot. How do you shoot on a daily basis? Well, I have a release trainer that I practice with, and I guarantee you, while I'm watching the World Series game tonight, I'll take a couple dozen shots with that release trainer just to make sure that that muscle memory stays intact. That release trainer probably has 200,000 frequent flyer miles. it's been to Asia a lot, and I've had to explain to a lot of security agents what it is, why it's not a threat. it's something that's vital. I mean, you've got to have a good foundation of a solid shot process. And I went through horrible target panic years ago. And when I broke out of it, I vowed that would never be a problem for me again. And that's, so I continue to practice good habits.
That's
good. So in addition to practicing with my shot, I spend a lot of time scouting. That's vital. I mean, absolutely vital to my success. I spend, literally 2 to 3 mornings a week during the summer, I'll be up at 3 o'clock and out scouting. And I mean, it's, you know, and again, that goes back to having a somewhat flexible schedule. I mean, if I'm back in the office by, 10, 11 at the very latest. But it allows me to get out into my areas, hike in, check out some new areas, check on bucks I've already got. And, one other practice technique I use is I always carry, I use a tight spot quiver, not an advertisement, because I'm not sponsored by them or anything. I just like the quiver, and it's a 5-arrow quiver. So I've got 4 broadheads in there, and Grim Reapers, that is a plug. so I've got 4 Grim Reapers in there, and then I've got 1 practice point. And that practice point has been, it's proven on the bales that it hits exactly like my broadheads do. So that practice point, I will pull that out of my quiver 2 to 3 times a day and take shots in the field. So whether I'm shooting at a little clump of grass or a little flower or a rotten stump, which, by the way, not all rotten stumps are rotten. They may appear to be rotten, but when your arrow hits like it's hitting a stone wall, that's pretty good feedback. I mean, first of all, number one, you hit your target, and that's great. But number two, usually costs you $20 too. So, but building that repetition and building confidence of practicing in the field, in the terrain that you're going to hunt in, is just invaluable to me. I mean, that's something that I literally do that every time I get ready to start a stock. I will take a shot that it comes close or as close as I can to replicating the shot I think I'm getting ready to take. So, patience. Wow. I just spend a ton of time behind my optics. I mean, I can't stress that enough. I love, like I said, in scouting, I get people all the time, hey, where do you hunt? Where do you hunt? Where can I find a big buck? And, you know, they're looking for GPS coordinates.
Right, right.
And I don't understand that. I mean, first of all, it strikes me as lazy. But second, that's half the fun is finding them. I mean, I love just being out in the field and finding. I mean, that moment when you see that big buck for the first time and it takes your breath away. I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I mean, that's a thrill. That's a rush for me. You know, and I mean, that's another element of patience is sometimes during the season, you find that buck and he's just not bedded in the right spot. You know it. You know there's no chance. You know it's a low percentage stock and you just got to, you know, wait them out. I mean, you know, I've waited on bucks for 2-3 days before you get what you feel is a really high percentage stock. And I mean, it's just not worth blowing them and educating them, in my opinion, but,
I agree with you on paper. I agree with you, but, historically I'm a forcer.
It's not always easy. Your hunts tend to be a little shorter too. You go somewhere and you hunt for a week and you've got a week to get it done. Yeah. I mean, I've got the season, so that's why I can hold back at times and try to be a little more patient. But, and then the third P, persistence, you know, one of the conclusions that I came to as I was kind of putting notes together for this is, and going through some of my past hunts is, man, I'm not sure I'm that great a hunter. I'm not one of those guys who goes out and scouts that animal all summer and then kills them on opening day. Never, ever happened for me. And I don't know if it's that or that I just don't want the season to be over quite that soon. But usually takes me several stocks to get ready to really kill that buck. And so, I mean, for me, I'll take a lot of practice stocks. I mean, if I see a smaller buck that's out away from the herd, dude, I'll go stalk that buck and see how close I can get. And I mean, getting close to them and then backing out without shooting them, that's like counting coup for me. I love it. It tightens your skills. It sharpens your skills, but more than anything, it just gives you that rush and teaches you how to control your nerves in those situations too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, you can't replace experience. And how you get experience is by doing it. I used to actually, back in the day, probably 20 years ago. So I moved to Arizona 25 years ago. Yeah, so about 20 years ago, when I was really just first learning what the heck spot and stalk was.
Yeah.
I used to do that in the off season. I used to go put stalks on everything. Hell, I would stalk my own dog.
Yep.
Now my wife tells me that I walk around the house like a ninja because when I get up in the middle, you know, in the morning, I don't want to wake up and I don't want to get the dogs up or whatever. I'm just like, I creep about the house all the time and I don't turn on lights. I'm always walking in the dark. And she's like, why do you do that? I'm like, because I've trained myself to that. So that is second nature. And I'm not a very sneaky person. I don't feel like I'm not a really good spot and stalk hunter. I use a tactic called spot and ambush.
Okay.
I just wrote an article that's going to come out in the EARN Journal here in this next issue. Because I'm not super sneaky and I'm not very, very patient, I can walk very quietly and I can move quietly, but I'm not one of those guys that could go, you know, 1 yard every 10 minutes because I'm just a very go type person. So, you know, I've blown a lot of deer out in my life because of that. But I've adapted spot and ambush. I've learned what deer, what not just deer, elk, antelope, whatever. I've learned their behaviors, and I've watched them, and I've made a very good I put together, and I don't know how to verbalize it yet, but I put together this plan in my head, and I can make a very good guesstimation, a very good educated guess as to where they're going to go and what they're going to do based on what they're doing right now. And I stalk to that position and wait for them to come to me. And
that's a great idea.
Sometimes
I
just
see. I tried
you know,
kind of a similar technique.
100 yards over or 50 yards over. So
yeah.
But.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not foolproof, but neither is spot and stalk. I mean, hey, I've had stalks that were just absolute sure things that blew up in my face at 300 yards. In fact, I hunted antelope this year, and I finally got one of the little buggers with my bow, and oh my gosh,
I saw it.
It was like my crowning achievement. I was so proud of it, but I tried a technique I called spot and spook,
mm-hmm.
and so basically I'd spot him, I'd see him out there 2 miles away, and I'd get cruising over towards him, and I'm telling you, I had him blow up anywhere from 40 yards to 400 yards. I mean, it was a humbling experience for me, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I'll tell you,
it's one of my favorite animals to spot and stalk.
Oh, I don't think I'll ever have
people ask me that all the time. They're like, how do you even do it?
Antelope.
I think this year I shot number 7.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that has my full respect.
And you know, most of them were long shots. I mean, I've killed very few under 50. Most
Mine
of them
wasn't
were,
close.
You know,
yeah.
70 or 70, 80 yard shots. This year I got mine at 50. But it's probably the animal that taught me how to spot and stalk better. And I learned more about hunting them more than any other animal because one. With antelope, you get so many stalks. So, like, if you're hunting deer, if you get one, maybe two stalks a day, you're golden. You're like the best thing ever.
Yeah, no kidding.
Where antelope, you might get 5, 6, 7, shit, I've got 10 in a day. You know, and it's a numbers game.
I had 8 in one day.
Yeah,
I had
so,
8 good
know.
Encounters in one day. And I didn't even get out there till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And
oh, wow.
I literally went from antelope to antelope, and I would run back to the truck. And I mean, I don't,
yeah.
John. I want something to be known. I don't like to run, but you know, hey, I had pretty solid motivation, you know. And I mean, it was just great. It was a rare day, and I went home. I think according to my Fitbit, I started. At 1 o'clock, I worked on the way up there. I got out there at 1 o'clock, like I said, and I had like 2,200 steps on my Fitbit.
Mm-hmm.
And then by sundown, I was closing in on 30,000 steps. So,
wow.
I mean, it was great. It was just awesome. I went home with my tail tucked between my legs, but I had just an awesome, awesome day.
Right. Yep.
So.
Yeah, and the terrain that they occupy, it's all just – pretty much looks flat and wide open. So you just need to learn how to use the terrain, and that gives you so much information and so much experience to apply to all the other animals that you hunt.
I think my mule deer hunt I've got coming up out in Utah in November is going to be a breeze after that. I mean, if I can sneak in on an antelope and hit one of those little buggers with a solid shot, then hey, I don't feel like my next mule deer hunt's going to be that big of a challenge. Getting up and down the mountain all those times is going to be the biggest challenge, you know. But
so
yeah.
You kind of touched on this a little bit about all the practice and stuff you do. Is there anything else that you do that's like, you know, part of your regime or something to prepare for a hunt?
You know, I mean. I shoot, one of the important things about my practice is for the last several years, I've, I've competed in local tournaments with my hunting bow. And I mean, I just this last year is the first year I've had, I bought a target bow and I got a great deal on it from a buddy, but, I've competed with my hunting bow in the open class because I've got a movable sight, but that's great because it puts you in the highest level of competition at the tournaments generally. And it so every shot has to be precise. And I mean, that just perfectly replicates hunting to me. I mean, you've got one shot, and I've made that shot in high pressure situations all throughout the year. So I have just total confidence that my bow is going to perform and it's going to put that arrow exactly where I want it to be. So that's one of the things. And then, you know, I mean, I hit the gym a little bit. I know to look at me, I'm quite a physical specimen. I mean, you know, I've kind of got that body by Taco Bell that I've been working on, you know, all about that fourth meal. But no, in spite of that, I do hit the gym quite a bit. I mean, mostly cardio and, you know, some leg stuff just to keep myself ready for, you know, running up and down those mountains, chasing after those deer. So,
yeah,
but that's pretty much, my off season though.
What's your favorite time of year to hunt mule deer and why?
Oh man. I love velvet mule deer. There is just something about, and I think it's because I spent so much time watching them throughout the summer. I just love seeing those velvet racks. And I mean, I'll take an early season hunt any day. That's, you know, they're just a little bit easier to pattern. You know, the days are longer, so it gives you more time to get more opportunities. And, you know, I mean, my hunting partner, Tim Lang, and I, we've started a new game over the last couple of years, and we'll go out, you know, hunt in the morning. And then midday we're sitting there and we start playing a game and we start seeing who can spot the most bedded bucks. And, you know, that's just kind of become a nice little contest for us. Keeps the midday hopping. And I'm telling you, if you're out there and you're looking, you're going to find them. I mean, they bed under trees. They bed under rocks. They bed under cliffs. I mean, you know, they bed in the brush, but half the time you can see those antlers sticking up out of it. So it gives you an opportunity to kind of extend that day and really give you a bit more day to work with. And that's what I love. Yeah. I mean, you know, hey, you only get, like I said, we in Colorado, we get 1 month for our early archery season, and that's I want to make the most of every minute of it.
Yeah, no, I hear you, because my seasons, like you said earlier, are 5 to 7 days. So
yep.
You know, I typically fly all over the place, so the, you know, rare occasion that I do drive, you know, I do have the option to maybe stay an extra day or two, but it gets expensive when you're trying to change flights and whatnot if you decide you want to stay places. And, you know, I have X amount of time to get it done, so my season is very condensed, so I have to make the best of it. And that's kind of why
I'm absolutely so
go my whole life.
Yeah, you've got to be aggressive in that situation. Yeah. I mean, I'll be in the same boat. I'm going to be ready. I'll be ready to run up and down that mountain as many times as I need to maximize my opportunities.
I lost you before. Where are you heading?
I'll be heading out to Utah next month.
Oh, Utah, okay.
I've got
cool.
That late hunt in on the Wasatch Front. And again, you know, I'll have just a finite amount of time. So I'll be maximizing every one of those opportunities, that's for sure.
Awesome. So when you spot a deer, okay, I'm going to give you a scenario. You find a bedded buck, okay, and he's in what you would call a good spot to put a stalk on him. Walk me through, you know, tell me what this perfect spot looks like, number one, and then walk me through if you can paint the perfect stalk, what that would be.
Sure. So, you know, I try to find open terrain to hunt. That's where I can maximize my skills, which I feel that I'm pretty good at glassing up animals. And if I can find them out there bedded, then I feel like I've got a significant leg up on them. you know, I started out like most guys, just still hunting, walking through the woods, hoping to bump into something. And I did manage to kill a couple of nice bucks doing that, but I realized that I was relying on luck. So I figured out one thing real quick, and that was if I spot them before they spot me, the odds are in my favor. But if they spot me first, it's pretty much done. You're walking towards them. You're hoping to get lucky. And hey, that works on forkies, but I'm not looking for forkies. I'm looking for more quality, mature bucks. And in doing so, you're just not going to get away with the same amount of stuff. So,
So
basically, if I spot that buck out there in the distance, the bucks in this open territory don't tend to stay bedded very long because the sun is always moving across, and you know, these shade spots are fleeting, to say the least. But So I'll get out there and I'll start trying to identify good landmarks. And one trick that I learned last year in identifying those landmarks, because everything, you know, everybody always says, well, you get over there and it looks different. Well, it does. So what I do now is I'll take a couple of pictures with my phone. And so I take those pictures and I'll kind of point at, and with my finger at, you know, pointing at where the animal's bedded. And then if I can take some notes just in the note section of my phone, you know, bedded facing east, or you know, think the wind's coming in this direction, whatever information I can put in there's been real helpful for me. So I'll spot that buck out there, take those notes, and get heading over there towards them. And while I'm doing this, I have this quote from Coach Wooden, from John Wooden, that always goes through my mind. It's be quick but don't hurry. So in other words, in every stock, there's times that you want to cover ground as fast as you can. And that's when you're out of sight, out of, they can't see you, they can't smell you, they can't hear you. Cover ground as fast as you can, because again, they're not going to be there forever.
Right.
So once I'll cover ground as quickly as I possibly can. And then this is something I'm a little OCD about. I'll take my boots off at about 300 yards. I hear people saying it. They do it at 200 yards or at 100 yards. I do it at 300 yards because I just want to eliminate as many variables as I can. And
okay.
I mean, you look at
you
me over there,
don't
they've
hunt
got
in the desert.
Well, that would definitely I would use those sneakies in that case and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Because don't get me wrong. I've picked more than one cactus spine out of my feet. That's definitely something I've had to go through. In fact, this year I had one that festered up pretty good on me. But I'll take them off, you know, good, like I said, 200 to 300 yards out, slip on a second pair of socks. I always carry an extra pair of thick socks. And I'll tuck my pant legs into the socks. So that's not grabbing on brush, and it just kind of decreases your profile. But, you know, mule deer have those huge ears, and man, they can hear everything. And I mean, it's just unreal. So, I mean, I'm not like most guys. I don't want to get to 20 yards. I feel that there's just way too much that can go wrong at 20 yards, and your window is pretty small. So I'll stop at 40 to 50 yards generally, as the, you know, case permits. And then I'll just wait. I mean, I'll wait them out. I mean, that's my, I don't want to pressure them. I'll try to get as comfortable as I can. And sometimes that comfort level is not very high. I mean, I've sat in raspberry patches before to wait them out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever been in a raspberry bush, they're not real comfortable.
No.
Lots of spines on those. But, I mean, my biggest buck, I sat in raspberry bushes for, gosh, I crawled through them for 50 yards, which it wasn't a whole lot of fun, but, you know, I got a 191-inch buck out of it, so, you know,
oh, geez,
no complaints.
Yeah. I'll take a raspberry bush for a 191-inch buck for sure. I know the feeling. I was hunting with Dwayne Adams, and I'm not sure if you know, familiar with him. He's a very well-known mule deer hunter and coos deer hunter, and he took me underneath his wing probably like 15, 16 years ago, and kind of showed me the ropes. Took my spot and stall game to a new level. Taught me how to glass, so on and so forth.
Now that guy was a true master. he knew his stuff for sure. He's awesome. Go ahead.
He's still going. He's still guiding. He'll guide till he dies. Actually, so
yep.
he actually just said that on. I was listening to Jay Scott's podcast a couple of days ago. He had him on there. I crawled, got into spot in this. I was within 70 yards of this big coos buck, 115-inch coos buck, which with a bow is just.
I
still have yet to get one that over 100 with my rifle. So, and I had a leg, my whole left leg from the knee to almost my butt was full of jumping choya. And I was sitting there for over an hour, and I was just dead still
because
the doe that he was tending to just had me pegged. And she finally put her head down. She stepped clear, and I drew back, and I shot. And I hit a branch, and I hit this buck low. We trailed them all night, picked them up the next morning, trailed them again, and I think we might have either jumped them or something, but we never did find them, and I was just devastated. But reminded me of you saying, sitting in there in a raspberry bush, I remember going through similar agony to try to get a buck, but of course I didn't have that 191-inch trophy on the end of it, but...
Well, hey, 115-inch coos buck isn't a whole lot different. I mean, relatively speaking, that's a phenomenal buck. My stepdad shot one last year with his bow. I think went 108.
Oh wow!
And yeah, just a beautiful
here
beautiful
in Arizona.
Buck. But yeah.
Oh,
yep.
Good for him,
up in the pines, actually. So, but yeah, you ever thrown anything? Because I've heard some horror stories about that, but.
Yeah.
But they just tend to react too much. And, you know, and that just, I mean, hey, we're shooting arrows. And, I mean, I've waited on bucks and had them get up and just haul butt for no reason. And, you know, that's a pretty humbling thing. But, hey, it's bow hunting. You know, if I wanted to kill something on every stock, you know, there are more effective methods of hunting them for sure. So,
yeah,
but that's just part of the game, you know. But
absolutely.
Yeah, so I'll wait them out, and once they stand up, I mean, you know, I've taken a number of different shot angles. It's, you know, they don't always present you with that perfect broadside shot, I mean, that we're all hoping for. I mean, I've shot a couple of them, you know, head on that it's a really quickly lethal shot. I mean, the blood trails from those shots have been just unbelievable. And actually, I remember you shot wasn't that an antelope last year that you shot on your show? Same thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, that blood trail you had, you know, it looked like somebody
crazy.
Opened up a paint can. And I mean, that's been my experience
as
well.
Space.
So yeah, exactly.
And every time I've ever shot one with the head on shot, always the same thing. I shot a cow elk that way. I shot several whitetail deer from the tree stand that way. That two antelope. Oh no, sorry, an antelope and a mule deer buck that I shot here in Arizona several years back, a little 4x4 velvet buck. And he didn't go very far, and it was the easiest blood trail ever. I mean, literally, like I said, you could track it from space if you wanted to.
Yeah, I've had them go 30. Let's see, I've had a deer that went 35 yards, and last year I shot a spike elk, and it's the record holder. It made it 70 yards, but
yeah.
I mean, literally, the moment that I shot that bull, he spun around, took three or four steps, did a somersault, got up. Broke my favorite arrow in the process too. That was the third animal I'd shot with that arrow, but I'll forgive him because he tasted excellent. Every time we have green chili elk burgers, I forgive that bull just a little bit more. But he did that somersault, got up, ran into a tree, made it about 50 more yards, and was dead on the spot there. It was
wow.
Yeah, it's a lethal shot for sure. I mean, you've got to know where to hit them, and you've got to have confidence that you can make the shot. I mean, it's not the biggest
Right.
window, but it is there, and it's very, very effective though.
Yeah, I was actually presented with that shot this year in Utah. It was a big 4x4, probably right around that 160
Yeah.
class buck, staring straight at me, 50 yards, got full draw, or was already at full draw before he was standing at me. But it was blowing wind like crazy, and I kind of just rushed the shot, never settled my pin, and I whiffed it right past him. And I was
Yep,
like,
and
oh my
boy, I tell
God.
you,
It's
you
like,
know
'cause in
that
my head, I was like, oh, you're dead. In my head, I was
exactly,
like,
yeah.
he was dead before I even drew back. And I was like,
Boy,
oh my God, I can't.
the wind is the great equalizer for a bow hunter. I mean, I remember years ago I had multiple stalks of this stinking deer on my way back up to the truck, and he was just in that perfect spot. He was at 45 yards, and I drew back on him. And I couldn't keep my pin on him. I mean, I was from his butt to his nose over and over, and I just let down and said, I'll see you another day, and I never did. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough, that wind.
You're a better man than me. I should practice in the wind all the time. So not every time, but whenever we get real windy days here, especially getting closer to season when we're like in monsoon season, we get some really crazy winds.
Oh,
I
yeah.
go and I go practice long range because I know one of my first year hunts of the year is Wyoming. And
Oh,
Wyoming,
yeah.
if it's not blowing 20 miles an hour,
Then it's blowing 40 miles an hour.
exactly. So
You
it's like,
bet.
and like I said, all of my antelope shots and most of my mule deer shots are all been relatively long distance, in that 60 to 70 range. So I purposely have designed my arrow setup and everything to deal with wind. And I practice a lot in the wind. It's just
Well,
this year I
I've
did
made
not
some
practice
serious
at all.
adjustments. Yeah, so I've made some serious adjustments to my arrow setup since that encounter, because I hate passing up shots at slam dunk distances on huge bucks. But so I went from shooting a fatter arrow. I'm now shooting a little skinny gold tip Pierce,
Me
kinetic
too.
Pierce, and I've got that thing cut down as short as I can, so I'm decreasing not only the diameter but the length. I'm shooting 4 2.3 inch super spine fletching from Vaintech, and then shooting a mechanical head. So I mean, I've taken everything into account that I can to decrease that wind drift, just because I mean, I want to. We owe it to the animals to make the most accurate shot we can, but I want to be able to make an accurate shot in just about every situation. So
Absolutely.
that's the
Absolutely.
changes I made. And it so far, I mean, I've gotten I killed my deer and my antelope this year, both with the same arrow and same broadhead. So far it's 2 for 2. No complaints from either of them. So
Nice. Awesome.
but
Yeah, I switched to the
yeah.
same arrow actually. I was shooting the Hunter XT, excuse me, the Hunter Pros.
Yep, it's the
Gold
exact
Tip
same
Hunter
thing I was
Pros.
shooting before. Yeah.
And I love
Great
them.
arrow.
I still shoot them out of one of my bows, just still set up for that arrow. But on my Halon, I'm shooting the Pierce, and I love them. I shoot Blazer Vanes. They've been really good to me. I've been shooting them for Jesus, I don't know how long, as long as I can remember. They buck the wind real good. They're stabilized fast. And they've been real, so I see no reason to change. I've tried a couple other ones. I'll leave those
Yep.
names out, but I really didn't like them. They shot better indoors, but then when I took them outside, I felt like I was getting more of a drift.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and see,
And
that's.
I don't know what it would attribute it to, because really the surface area wasn't. They were actually lower profile, a little bit longer. But lower profile, so technically the surface area really wasn't any different. So I don't know why, but I don't know. I mean, indoors they
You
were
know, and
laser beams.
it's Yeah, and the funny thing is, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, nor do I play one on TV, but it's, you know, I've done my own little experiments with accuracy, and you know, it's all about the aerodynamics of it though. And I, like I said, I can't speak for exactly what's causing it, but what I found is that these are short vanes. It's a low profile vane that I'm shooting, and that fourth vane gives it just enough extra steering that it brings it up to, you know, giving the accuracy that I need, but without drifting as much in the wind. And I've done, and like I said, you know, it's anecdotal evidence. It's just my own personal experience, but I'll go out to the archery range when it's windy and shoot at 80 yards and see what's drifting the most. And, you know, these arrows and these fletchings just flat stayed on target better for me. And so that's what, that's what I ended up shooting, and it's been good for me. I've shot, I think I switched to this setup and this fletching setup in like 2012, and I've been real, real happy with it so far. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Good deal. So, well, that's all I got for you as far as questions. You said you got a hunt coming up in the Wasatch. What else you got planned? Is that your last hunt for the year? Or?
Well, that's my last hunt for the year, but my wife has a rifle mule deer tag here in Colorado. So we've been out getting the rifle all ready for her, and she's my wife is just one of those people who just stays calm in situations that, well, I don't know, maybe it doesn't mean quite as much to her as it does to me. She doesn't eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff like I do, but you know, she's one for one. She's had one mule deer tag, and she's got a Pope and Young buck, and she's taken one shot. So we're hoping to see if that can still maintain this year. We've got a couple real, real good bucks spotted for her and scouted, so hopefully they make it through that second season into the third, and we can, you know, shoot a hole in one of them, bring it on home. But
that'll be, and then I've got that rut for you guys, right?
What's
that? Rifle hunt. That's a rut rifle hunt, isn't it?
Boy, it just about is. The seasons are all a week later this year for rifle, and so her hunt is actually like November 5th through 13th.
Okay.
And I usually see in my area, I usually see the rut peak at about the 19th of November.
Okay.
So we should be getting some early rut activity. And if nothing else, man, we just want to get out there and have a great experience, take our son out with us, and just have some fun in the woods, you know, build some more memories.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait until my kids start accompanying me on some hunts. I've taken my coyote hunting and stuff like that, just, you know, quick morning thing in front of the house or whatever, but I haven't taken a big game on it because they still don't have the patience to sit for very long.
John, I'm not going to say we're totally there either, but we're working towards it.
We only can. So.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Well, good deal, man. So. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, and if you guys want to go check out Henry's contributor page on the Outdoor Insiders, go check them out. Just go to the contributors section, look them up. Is there anywhere else you want to direct people to where they can find you?
Yeah, I do. You know, I do most of my stuff on social media. I'm not a millennial. I just act like one on the internet. I'm on Facebook as Henry Ferguson, and on Instagram as Big Chief Whack-a-Buck. It's my Cherokee name. I'm like everybody in the country. I'm 1/16th Cherokee, so I figure that's about from my right knee down is Cherokee. So that you know.
Nice.
But no, that's where I do most of my stuff, and I keep pictures up there pretty often, and trying to kind of chronicle the journey and let friends and family who I don't live that close to kind of keep in touch with it. So it's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
Good deal, man. Well, thank you. I appreciate you. And maybe one of these days I'll get you out here in the desert.
Oh, man, I'd love that.
Some of us are cactus buck out here.
I would love that. Yeah, I'll try to find a different way of covering my feet.
Yeah, we're gonna get you a pair of those Sneak Tech boots, man. That's what I use. Those things are the bomb.
You know what?
They're like a game changer. Like, I started using them not last year, but the year before, and literally, like, my success rate hasn't really gone up because I don't want to sound like a conceited bastard right now, but I've had like above 75% success rate for the last 12 years on all
Dang.
My tags. And I have like 12, an average of 12 tags a year, just so everybody knows why.
Wow.
So,
that's
yeah,
awesome.
I'm talking about just one, two tags a year, but
sure.
My being able to get it done faster and more efficiently, definitely. Without a doubt. I mean, like, what would take me 10 stalks before is taking me 5 stalks now, you know?
Oh, wow. Well, I actually picked some of those up this last year at the ISE here in Denver. They had
okay.
booths, and when I saw them, I was like, man, I've tried all of the previous generations of those things, you know, the bear's feet and the sneaky feet.
Yeah,
and
these are
all that.
Times better.
Yeah, they seem to stay in place a lot better. But,
and
you
they
know,
last longer.
Yeah, I mean, when it came down to it this year, I still put on double socks. It's almost a habit for me, but more than anything,
right?
That double sock, you're at the end of the day, you're still wearing socks. So,
yeah.
You know, cactuses, sharp sticks, sharp
yeah.
rocks, you feel every one of them. So they have another benefit, and that's they slow you down. So,
yeah,
you know, which is
yeah.
always helpful in stocking. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yep, I've got them. I've got them ready to go. So they have very few miles on them from this season. So
you'll use them out here,
Utah.
You'll use
awesome.
Them over here because you can't cross a jumping cholla patch in your socks.
No, I wouldn't dream of it. Wouldn't dream of it. I grew up in Arizona. I'm familiar with those things.
So. All right, man. Yeah. Very good. I'll talk to you soon, and good luck on those hunts if I don't talk to you before that. And looking forward to see some shit-eating grins with some big racks.
Hey, thanks a lot, John. Hopefully I
All
get
right.
to. Hopefully we get to provide those. So thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on, John.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
All right, take care.